This recording is from FinTech Nexus USA, formerly known as London FinTech USA, held at the Javits Center in New York City on May 25th to 26, 2022. It's from our keynote stage and is titled, Will DeFi Eat the World? Speaking on the session are Liz Matthew from Consensus, with moderator Bo Bruskern from FinTech Nexus.
Welcome. This one's going to be a little interactive. We're going to ask questions of the audience, so you get to participate. So Bobby, if you could bring up our Slido. When this pulls up, you will have a chance to point your camera at the screen and take a number of questions. So the first one is going to be, do you own a DeFi wallet? E.g. MetaMask. MetaMask has, what market share do we have here?
Over 95% market share. It's the oldest self-hosted wallet. It's been around since 2016. So yeah, 95%, and I'd say 30 million monthly active users on it today.
Okay. So this will be, we'll go question by question, but we're going to run through the interview here because while you're answering these questions, Liz, why don't we level set and give a quick introduction of who you are and what you spend your time working on.
Sure. I run business development and partnerships for MetaMask Institutional, which is the institutional fork, if you will, of the retail wallet. I've been at Consensus for a year, and prior to that, I have a pretty traditional fixed income capital markets background.
Okay, great. And then just also, because it looks like from the early results, we've got some folks, let's call it 60% approximately, that actually have a wallet. Probably a lot have heard of MetaMask, but we should probably clarify what's the difference between a DeFi wallet like MetaMask and, say, a Coinbase or a Gemini or another.
Yeah, and I did not fully appreciate the nuance here before I joined Consensus myself. So I think the key distinction here is that MetaMask as a wallet is a self-hosted wallet that gives you access to over 17,000 different ways to interact with decentralized finance and Web3 in general. So you have the ability to buy, sell, lend, borrow, stake, hedge, swap, buy NFTs, lend them out, and do all kinds of quirky things, all because over the last 2 years, you've had, because of the inherent composability and open source nature of decentralized finance and Web3, you've had about 17,000 protocols just develop in the ecosystem. And when they are built for the first time, they are built to integrate with MetaMask as a wallet. So practically overnight, we've gone from a paradigm where you have maybe two dozen broker-dealers or syndicate desks in traditional capital markets that were originally the purveyors of financial engineering, were the people that were responsible for the creation and the distribution of financial risk, to a paradigm where you now have tens of thousands of open source protocols that you can access to have access to liquidity and execution and risk profiles, some of which we've just not seen in traditional markets.
It's an amazing ecosystem that is continuing to develop. And let's move on. I think Kevin is now going to move on to the next question in the Slido. So this one will be, what was your first significant DeFi trade? So if we can get the votes up on that one while we continue our conversation. And this is obviously for those that have a DeFi wallet. So what you just said could be applied to retail, which is fascinating, but MMI, MetaMask Institutional, is, as you said, a fork of MetaMask, and tell us how that's different.
Yeah, absolutely. So summer of 2020, DeFi summer, when really the sort of the momentum behind DeFi protocols really took off. It was kind of around a couple of months afterwards where we had funds reach out to Consensys to tell us that the retail wallet lacked certain capabilities that made it just not fit for enterprise purpose. And so really on the back of existing retail customers, we built out a version that solved for a couple of fundamental things. Firstly, they needed to have multi-user permissioning. They needed to have custodial access to their portfolio. And so MetaMask Institutional has built in integrations with today 8 custodial partners that have the jurisdictional licenses geographically distributed and gives you exposure to different custody tech stacks depending upon what your use case is and which part of your portfolio you're looking to manage. And so we've taken a custody agnostic but yet multi-custodial approach to solving for having that fiduciary agent manage your keys and storage of your assets. Secondly, I'd say, how do we think about compliance and counterparty risk as it pertains to DeFi? And this is a very unique problem that we get to solve in Web3. So we have a solution that we've had in-house for a couple of years now that helps you screen all the transfers associated with an address that has ever interacted with a liquidity pool. And on the MetaMask Institutional Dashboard, you're able to run these pre-trade checks as well as post-trade monitoring. And so our approach has been, given the regulatory compliant requirements of an organization that looks to access DeFi, we thought it was very important for us to get that piece right. And there's so much more that needs to be done to solve for KYC in a scalable but yet decentralized way. But compliance as well as custodial access was what we solved for first last year. And then furthermore, taking the user experience out of the browser extension onto a dashboard so that you can actually track your portfolio. It was just surprising to me that there weren't tools in the market to have a one-shot view of your positions across various trade strategies, like how is my lending portfolio doing? How is my staking portfolio doing? So that's another feature that we launched last quarter, and we'll continue to iterate from there. Today, the dashboard is a read-only tool, but as we think about price discovery and curation of opportunities in DeFi, we're going to morph that to more of a read-write platform.
That's great. Now, again, I think this request goes to Bobby in the back. If you could share the results, because it's quite interesting. Yeah. 46% of you who own a DeFi wallet engaged in staking as their first significant trade, which is really interesting because it's essentially securing the network.
Yeah.
And for those of you that if we can't get these slides shared, I'll tweet them out later. So let me just pause for a second and say, this is where I get really excited, right? When I start to hear a proper expert in the space use a blend of language that is coming from DeFi, which has its own language.
Yes.
And then the traditional banking, right? There was this, your sentences had sort of a salt and a pepper from each camp. This is where we're heading. For those of you that are totally like just a little bit lost but really excited, we have a service for you. We have a product for you. Maybe I'll get to that later. So let's move to the next question on the, so point your cameras at the next QR code, which is how comfortable are you with DeFi applications? This is for everyone and we're asking not at all comfortable, a little comfortable, quite comfortable, and I'm totally comfortable with this. So please answer those. That'll be interesting to see. Now back to MMI, because it has such a vast market share on the retail side and then a really sophisticated approach to institutional. I'm super curious about what these institutions are asking you to build. What is the core capability that they are begging you for, aside from what you've already developed?
Yeah, you know, we take a very customer-led approach here, and you know, it was on the back of customers asking us to solve for these three things about custody, compliance, and portfolio view that we brought this much out. Going forward, our core user base continues to be funds, and so what they care about is improving the user experience in how they interact with DeFi. That means better price execution. You know, I think a lot of momentum has been built around improving execution in what I would consider CeFi flavors of Web3, where you are going to a centralized exchange to buy or sell or potentially buy structured products linked to those risk profiles. But there's so much more that needs to be done around your execution rates, execution around MEV resistant pools, programmatic access. So we have quantitative funds that ask for API versions of this. We're going to continue to see much of that around the execution side. And then we still have to solve for scale in how we think about just reporting, accounting, monitoring. And so while we offer today, you know, a transaction history on the dashboard, which you can download, we know that we're going to have to externalize those APIs to provide sort of straight through access to fund admins and auditors. And that will be something that we'll solve for this quarter. Come month-end statements, you know, no one wants to be piecing together spreadsheets. So, yeah.
Right, and working off the brilliant backbone of the blockchain, and then having to pull that into a spreadsheet seems like moving from the second decade of the third decade of the of this century back into the last decade of the last century. Like, yeah. It is a 30-year trip. So that absolutely needs to be solved. So here's the core question. And I think it's going to be challenging for a lot of us who've grown up in TradFi. Do TradFi and DeFi depend on each other? Are we going to see, will the dominance of traditional financial institutions as we know them, like banks, will they continue to be as dominant in the future?
Yes, I think it was Bill Gates that said people tend to overestimate the amount of change that you will see over the next 2 years and underestimate the change that can be expected over the next 10 years.
Right.
In the first 2 years of my involvement in this industry, I did spend a fair amount of time working with, the largest of investment banks to think about how we might bring certain functionality in the bond issuance cycle onto a ledger, and beginning with a private permission network. And I think, you know, if you've ever had the pleasure of reading the document at DTCC that defines how a coupon payment is paid out, I think very quickly you will understand that it's really not the right way to be thinking about such a disruptive innovation. On one hand, you've got extremely expensive cost structures that prohibit the largest of financial institutions to service a majority of funds or institutions. And on the other hand, you as an individual can go and stake your ETH in a liquidity pool and receive daily rewards in your digital wallet. And the two worlds just don't... I think it would be a waste of energy to try and solve for the interdependencies of both worlds, because there's so much that needs to be solved for the core user that, you know, I speak to almost 50 funds a week at this point globally that say we are using a spreadsheet, a hardware ledger device, and the retail wallet to make sense of our portfolio today, and we need a solution to make that work. And that is independent of anything in legacy infrastructure.
That's a fascinating and nuanced explanation. Thank you. Let's quickly review the results from the last question we had. And we've got 35% equal split between not at all comfortable and a little comfortable, 35% each.
But Alec, our work is cut out right
now. We do. Yeah, we have a lot of work to do. 20% of you report yourselves as being very comfortable. And then there's a little segment, 10%, that said quite comfortable. So it's sort of, we're anchored a little bit over on the uncomfortable to just a little bit side. And our final Slido question of the day, please pull that up. This will be, how eager are you to learn more about DeFi? This isn't as self-serving as it sounds. It really is. We're curious about this because the sentiment of this crowd, which is traditional TradFi, institutions, VCs, and fintechs, right? Have we piqued curiosity yet? Not we, but like, has the DeFi world piqued the curiosity of this segment? So super curious to hear about that. Okay, so how do you think about mass adoption? Is that something you think about at all?
I think we're so early. I think it's Consensus is a relatively young company, and we have, you know, ambitions to be able to help with solving for needs for the developers in how they access the blockchain, and this could be Ethereum or other EVM compatible chains. And we have a tool called Infura, which is an API SaaS service used by 430,000 developers globally today. And then we have MetaMask, which we think of as the ultimate gateway to DeFi at the retail and institutional level. There are enough of a core user base for these three products that need to be solved for already. And I think from an execution standpoint, it would be a challenge to try and move away from solving for those users and try to, you know, modify the design of the product to make it ready for mass adoption. I think we're still very early in trying to solve for the core user needs. And there's so much to do there. So, it isn't so much of a philosophical thing. It is just a matter of bandwidth and timing and prioritization.
For sure. Okay, we'll share the results of the last poll. 69% very interested. 23% quite interested in learning more about DeFi. 6% a little interested, not haven't really piqued my curiosity yet. 2% of you are like, I thought I was coming to a fintech conference. What is this? Not at all interested. So thank you. Let's move to the confidence screen showing us our time remaining. Okay, so now speed round. Let's skip over Luna and Terra because that has been covered by every knowledgeable person on every panel of this show. But let's talk about, what does this tell you about where we are in the maturation of the market?
Yeah, it's, like I said, it's still very early days, but because of the strong product market fit that we are seeing with MetaMask Institutional. I mean, we launched in October. We've onboarded 300 organizations since then. I think what this tells me is that we're raising the bar in terms of defining a category in itself for DeFi institutions. What this means now is because we've got, you know, 7 custodial partners on the platform today, I think funds are beginning to expect that if they have a key management solution on the back of this platform, they expect them to be able to support access to all chains right from day one. I don't think it's fair to tell them that we will give you access to a particular chain, but it's going to take 6 months to do that. The trade goes away by then. I think there's an expectation that that their custodial tech stack supports both fungible tokens as well as non-fungible tokens. We've seen several funds that launch only NFT-based portfolios and want to be able to view that, value that. They expect to be kept safe. They expect to know the health of the liquidity pool before they trade. And they expect to be able to get a month-end valuation statement that tells them what's in their portfolio. So in that sense, there's a certain standardization I see now across custodial tech stacks that enable institutional DeFi activity, and it's quite likely that, you know, proprietary sort of homegrown solutions by some of the participants that that don't support all the chains, that don't support all the kinds of types of signings that you need in DeFi, are likely to phase out, and people expect a certain level of standardization around these.
So one thing we haven't touched on, which will be interesting, I think, for those that are deeper in DeFi, is the topic of the merge, which is maybe coming up this year.
It is coming up this year.
You have an inside scoop on that. And so we don't have much time left, but did you have a very brief sort of like, does this change anything, and if so, what?
Yeah, it's huge. So the current understanding is that the merge is scheduled for, I believe, July, August. I think this is so fundamental. It's probably the largest decentralized global upgrade on a network we've seen. If people in the audience understand how many years in advance you plan a network upgrade within your own private enterprise that may run maybe 200 applications, that looks like 3 years, 4 years sometimes. And so to think of a network upgrade at this scale by a network that isn't controlled by any particular private enterprise is, to me, fascinating. But what it means for the health of the ecosystem is that we're moving from Ethereum as a currency to go from sort of a proof of work mechanism where miners were using compute power to record transactions on the ledger to a proof of stake mechanism. And what that means is that you are going to see a more secure, more scalable, and more environmentally sustainable network. And it really lays the foundation for several upgrades down the line to improve the scalability on the network. So just from a sheer execution standpoint, I think it's fascinating, but it's also a step in the right direction towards the future sustainability of Ethereum as a network.
Great.
I could talk about this for hours.
So could I. So could I. Thank you so much, Liz. It was an honor to have you on stage, and we'll hope to get you up here again.
Thank you.
Cheers.